James Bond has had 6 actors, same character, same world rules, same license to kill, 6 completely different performances. Nobody says that's not Bond. We accept that the character persists across renderings, but we have no vocabulary for what's actually happening. No formal way to separate what Bond is from how any specific actor renders him. What if we did?
It really is a profound question when you strip it all down.
Today we're covering 4 things.
Mm-hmm.
First, why every franchise has an implicit specification that nobody writes down properly. Second, what happens when you treat that specification as a Git repository versioned, branched, validated. Third, how actors, translators, and illustrators are rendering functions, and what that means when AI enters the picture. And fourth, what renders spec Harry Potter medium film style Tarantino actually looks like, and why the audience might become the renderer.
It is a massive agenda today. And honestly, if you follow this logic all the way through, it just completely dismantles and rebuilds how we think about intellectual property.
It really does. So welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are exploring the hidden architecture of transmedia storytelling.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
And we're pulling from 2 core sources for this. We've got Dmitry Zarnikov's working paper, Canon as Repository, and there's a companion article we're looking at called Your Franchise is a Repository.
Right.
So our mission here is to really shift how you, the listener, understand creative IP. We need to stop looking at these beloved stories as like static content objects that just sit on a shelf.
Exactly. We have to start seeing them as manageable version-controlled systems.
Yep.
Which is a necessary shift because right now, the entertainment industry is kind of flying blind.
Totally blind.
What's really wild here is that every franchise you love already has a specification.
Right. An implicit one.
Yes. It has an underlying canon, specific constraints, world rules. I mean, you know intuitively that Batman doesn't use guns, right?
Yeah, or that magic in Harry Potter requires a wand.
Yeah.
And an incantation.
Exactly. But right now, to manage these massive multi-billion dollar universes, the industry relies on these things they call story Bibles.
Oh, story Bibles. Yeah, having worked adjacent to some of these projects, let me just tell you, story Bible sounds very official and holy. But it's usually just a giant, completely disorganized Word document sitting on a shared drive somewhere.
It really is. And they are fundamentally flawed. They're informal. They tend to just describe what happened in past episodes rather than specify the underlying rules of the universe.
Right.
And crucially, they're unversioned. If an editor goes in and tweaks a character's backstory, there's rarely a structural record of what was changed, who changed it, or why.
But wait, hold on. What about the really big players? I mean, Lucasfilm has the holocron for Star Wars.
Right, the famous holocron.
Yeah. It's legendary for being this hyper-detailed database of, you know, every alien, every ship, every obscure planet. Doesn't that solve the problem?
You would think so. But even the most sophisticated franchise management system ever built falls into the exact same trap.
Really? How so?
Well, the holocron has something like 80,000 entries of Star Wars canon, but it isn't version controlled in a strict software engineering sense. Mm. Changes to the database aren't recorded as distinct commits. There is no diff.
Meaning no trackable delta between the old state and the new state.
Exactly. It's immutable. So let's pause and connect this to something every listener has probably witnessed. Think about the fan outrage we see online.
Oh, yeah. The endless discourse.
Right. When fans get furious about a movie, whether it's the MCU or the later seasons of Game of Thrones or the retroactive changes to Harry Potter, it's almost never about the cinematography.
No, or the CGI. It's almost always about consistency.
Exactly. Take the massive cultural controversy surrounding The Last Jedi.
Oh boy, yeah.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that wasn't just a dispute over a creative direction or, you know, whether a space battle looked cool. It was fundamentally a specification violation claim.
A specification violation claim. Okay, explain how that works in the context of Luke Skywalker.
Well, audiences felt that Luke Skywalker's established trait constraints the core rules of his character that were built over decades were violated.
Specifically, his defining optimism.
Right. Yes. His relentless optimism was replaced by this deeply cynical hermit persona. But because Lucasfilm had no canonical version-controlled repository to officially adjudicate that dispute,
there was no way to prove whether it was a valid evolution or a bug in the code.
Exactly. There was no way to verify it against the core specification. So the discourse just devolved into a shouting match between fans and the studio.
I mean, it's like trying to build a multi-billion dollar skyscraper using a napkin sketch instead of architectural blueprints.
That's a great way to put it.
You're bound to have the plumbing run straight through the elevator shaft eventually. You just can't scale an intellectual property that way. Which brings us to a core realization, and I really want you to remember this. Your franchise doesn't have a continuity problem. It has a specification infrastructure problem.
Precisely. And if the root cause is a lack of infrastructure, then the solution isn't to hire more continuity editors to desperately polish the end product.
Right, you don't fix the plumbing by repainting the wall.
Exactly. The solution is to optimize the underlying specification itself.
Which reveals that this isn't just a Hollywood problem, is it?
Mm-hmm.
When we look at Zarnikov's research, this is a massive cross-disciplinary phenomenon.
It is. The paper introduces this concept as the rendering problem.
The rendering.
Yeah. The core rule here dictates that a specification of bounded complexity is always rendered into an implementation of vastly greater complexity.
Okay, bounded complexity versus vastly greater complexity.
Right, and that transition creates an emergent specification gap.
Let me ensure I'm getting this. So if an author writes, he walked into a messy bedroom that's bounded, it's just six words.
Yep.
But when a film director renders that scene, a set designer has to decide exactly what kind of mess it is.
Right, they have to fill in all the details.
Like, are there pizza boxes? Are they from a local place or a chain? What era are the clothes on the floor from? Suddenly, those six words explode into thousands of visual data points.
That is a perfect example. No specification, no matter how brilliant or detailed the author is, can contain all the information that the final rendering will ultimately need. The person doing the rendering always has to fill in the blanks.
And that completely shatters how we normally talk about books and movies. Because we usually say, you know, the book is the original art and the movie is an adaptation of it.
But under this framework, that's entirely wrong.
Right. The work is not the book. The book is one rendering of the work.
That is the exact critical distinction. The work is the abstract specification. The book is just the text-based rendering of it.
Mind-blowing.
To really help you visualize how universal this is, I want to describe visual three from the research, the rendering problem across domains.
Okay, lay it out for us.
Picture a chart with five columns. It proves this three-layer structure exists everywhere. You start with a specification, it goes through a rendering process, and results in a final output.
Okay, I'm picturing it. Walk me through the columns.
Let's start with biology. Your DNA is the specification. But DNA itself doesn't do anything, right? It has to be rendered into proteins, which then results in the final output, your phenotype, your physical body. The DNA is bounded. The body is vastly complex.
Okay, that makes sense.
What's next?
Organizations. A company has an organizational schema or a business plan that's the spec. It gets rendered into daily operations, resulting in the final output, the customer experience.
Oh, and this maps perfectly to spectral brand theory, too.
Yes, absolutely.
For anyone who's looked at SBT or Kapfer's work from 2008 on brand identity, this is the exact same structure.
It's identical.
You have a brand specification, say, the core identity of Hermes. That spec is rendered into multidimensional signals, like their store design, their pricing, the leather they use.
Right.
And the final output is how observer cohorts actually perceive the brand.
Exactly. SBT terminology aligns perfectly here.
Mm.
Observer cohorts are tracking those rendered signals to understand the underlying brand spec.
We even see it in science. A researcher's raw data and methodology, the research repository, is the specification. It gets rendered into the format of an academic paper, which is then evaluated by peer review.
And finally, we arrive back at creative IP.
Exactly. The canon is the specification. It gets rendered into a specific medium, like a film or a game, resulting in audience perception.
So in every single one of these domains, that three-layer structure exists.
Yes. And there is a massive specification gap at every single transition.
This is a huge aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
So if we know this rendering problem is a universal law of information, and we know the issue with creative IP is a lack of specification infrastructure,
they actually fix it.
Yeah. Because as I understand it, software engineering ran into this exact same problem in the 1990s.
They absolutely did.
When thousands of developers were trying to work on the same massive code bases without breaking them.
Right. And they solved it using Git version control.
Okay.
What's truly groundbreaking in this research is how perfectly Git semantics map onto storytelling.
Unpack that for it.
In this new architecture, the canonical specification, the absolute truth of the story, the underlying rules, the character traits, lives on what software engineers call the main branch.
The golden source of truth.
Yes. From there, you have tags. In software, a tag marks a specific release, like version 1.0.
Right.
In publishing, a tag is an edition. So the first edition of a novel is tag V1.0.
Okay.
If the author releases a revised second edition, that's tag V2.0. The mathematical difference between them is the complete, permanent, searchable record of exactly what changed and why.
That is so clean.
But here is where it gets really powerful. Everything else is a fork.
A fork, meaning a branch that splits off from the main path.
Correct. A French translation of that novel isn't just a translation. It is a fork of tag V1.0.
Oh, wow.
A film, a video game, a comic book adaptation, a line of action figures, they are all forks. The old word we use, adaptation, actually hides the structural reality of what's happening.
But the word fork reveals it.
Exactly.
All right, I have to push back here, though.
Go for it.
Source code is just math and logic. Storytelling is an art.
Sure.
If a screenwriter is adapting a novel into a film, and they invent an incredible, enriching backstory for a character just to make a specific scene work, does that amazing idea just get lost in their specific, isolated fork?
It's a great question.
How does the core story ever grow if everything is just branching away from the main spec?
This raises a vital point about how IP evolves, and it's where the concept of canon governance via pull requests comes in.
Pull requests.
Yes. The screenwriter doesn't just lose that brilliant idea. In this system, they submit a pull request, or PR, back to the main branch.
So they basically say to the creator, hey, I invented this new detail. Do you want to make it official?
Exactly. The original author, or whoever the canon maintainer is, reviews that PR.
Okay.
If it's accepted, that new backstory merges into the canonical specification. Now it's available for all future forks to use. The next video game or comic book will include that backstory.
And if it's rejected?
If it's rejected, it isn't destroyed. It simply remains a rendering-specific detail confined to that one film's fork.
That is brilliant. It creates a two-way street for creativity. And it means the lore gets richer, but in a controlled way.
And furthermore, treating the story like code allows for CI/CD.
Continuous integration and continuous deployment.
Right. In software, these are automated tests that run to make sure new code doesn't break the app.
Yeah.
In storytelling, you can run automated consistency checkers. Imagine a writer drafts a new scene, and the system instantly flags a timeline anachronism.
Well, that would save so much time.
Or it warns them that a character constraint is being violated before production even begins.
Let me paint a picture for you, the listener, to really solidify this. We're looking at visual one from the paper, the Canon repository.
It's a great visual.
Imagine a massive glowing tree. The trunk of that tree is a central golden node labeled spec. That's your main branch, your pure canon. Extending outward from that trunk are different colored branches, or forks. One branch goes to a book, so it takes on the texture of paper.
Yeah.
Another branch goes to a film, and it takes on film grain. Another goes to a video game, and it becomes a pixel grid. A comic takes on panel lines, a translation gets a different script, and a toy becomes a 3D block.
And along each path, you see the history.
Exactly. Along each of these branches, you can see little dots. Those are the commits, the small decisions the director or author made along the way. Tags mark the major versions.
But then there's the best part.
Yeah, on the film branch, you see an arrow pointing backward, right back into the golden trunk. That's the pull request. That's the movie adding something so good, the original creator decided to make it canon for everyone.
It's a beautiful visualization. And I really want to stress that this isn't science fiction.
Wait, really?
Yeah, there is a real-world proof of concept for this operating right now on GitHub.
No way!
Yep, at Spectral Branding Canon Repo. The repository is supported by over 20 peer-reviewed papers on Zenodo validating the broader framework.
That's incredible.
And they use Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet as the model to prove it works.
Okay, I have to ask, how do you put Shakespeare in a Git repository?
By breaking it down into its components, Shakespeare's original text, the character traits, and the Verona setting sit on the main branch, tagged V1.0.
Okay.
Baz Luhrmann's famous 1996 film with Leonardo DiCaprio is a fork.
Oh, of course.
It uses the exact same specification, the original dialogue, but it applies entirely different rendering parameters for its modern-day setting and hyperkinetic visual style.
Wow.
On the other hand, West Side Story is a fork that actually transforms the spec itself. It changes character names to Tony and Maria and adjusts the world rules to 1950s New York.
That makes total sense.
Ultimately, every single theater production of Romeo and Juliet globally is just a fork of one single specification.
Okay, so if the core story is the repository and the movie we watch is just a fork, what exactly is an actor? Because here's where it gets really interesting. I mentioned this at the top of the show.
Yeah.
James Bond has had six actors, same specification, six renderings.
Let's break that down with visual too from the paper Bond as rendering function, because the actor's role changes entirely in this paradigm.
Walk us through it.
Imagine a single character specification card for James Bond at the top. It lists his essential traits: loyalty to MI6, trauma, lethal capability, a taste for luxury.
That is the input.
Exactly. Below that card, imagine six arrows pointing down to six actor silhouettes: Connery, Moore, Dalton, Brosnan, Craig.
Okay.
Every single silhouette acts as a mathematical function labeled render.
Right. They take the input and process it through their own craft.
Exactly. And the output boxes below them yield completely different adjectives.
Yeah.
For Sean Connery, the output is suave physical.
Right.
For Roger Moore, the render function produces ironic detachment. For Daniel Craig, it produces wounded brutality.
It's the exact same input passed through different human functions, yielding completely different outputs. Hold on. I want to make sure everyone listening just caught the implication of that. Style is not the art. Style is just a parameter of the rendering function.
Yes.
So if someone says Daniel Craig is the best Bond, what they're really saying is that his specific rendering function output matches our current cultural preference better than Roger Moore's does.
Precisely. The underlying Bond hasn't changed.
Which means a miscast actor is a rendering function whose output violates the specification.
That's a perfect way to phrase it. The actor's job is to take the bounded specification from the script and fill that massive specification gap we talked about earlier.
Right, with their unique voice, their posture, the micro expressions on their face.
Exactly, they fill it with their craft.
So when we see news about Matthew McConaughey licensing his voice to an AI company, McConaughey licensing his voice is an actor becoming a callable rendering function.
Yes. You can now pass text into the McConaughey function and get his stylistic output.
That is wild.
And this brings us directly to the looming presence of artificial intelligence in Hollywood and publishing. Many view AI as an existential threat to authorship.
Oh, for sure.
But this framework argues the exact opposite. AI doesn't threaten authorship. It clarifies it.
I think a lot of writers would vehemently disagree with that. How does an AI generating a script clarify human authorship?
By drawing a permanent hard line between the act of specification and the act of rendering.
Okay, explain that.
Specification is the true creative act. It's deciding what the story is fundamentally about, inventing the world rules, determining the character constraints.
Right.
Rendering is the craft act, the typing of the prose, the drawing of the storyboard.
Got it.
AI is becoming incredibly capable at rendering. It can mimic prose styles. It can generate visually stunning outputs, but it cannot originate the specification.
Because it doesn't have intent.
Exactly. AI cannot invent the specific, deeply human constraint that makes James Bond recognizable across 50 years of culture.
It's like the invention of the camera.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Think about what happened to painters in the 19th century. Photography didn't replace painting. It replaced painting's rendering function.
Yes.
It freed painters from having to perfectly, photorealistically render reality.
Oh.
Because the camera could do the rendering, painting moved up the stack to the specification layer.
Exactly.
That stack shift gave birth to impressionism, cubism, and abstraction movements that were about specifying an emotional vision rather than just rendering a landscape. The exact same stack shift is coming for creative professionals right now.
That is an excellent historical parallel. And what's fascinating is that we are already seeing this stack shift codified legally.
Really? Where?
Look at the provisions from the 2023 Writers Guild of America strike. They established that AI cannot receive writing credit, nor can it be considered a writer.
Oh, right.
Why? Because copyright and credit legally attached to the specification, not the rendering.
The author's enduring contribution is the specification. The rendering is delegable.
Exactly. The human mind controls the specification, which remains the locus of creative authority. The AI simply acts as a high-powered tool to assist with the delegable labor of rendering that spec into a final medium.
So what does this all mean for you and me? For the people actively watching these movies and reading these books.
It changes everything.
Because if rendering is becoming a delegable, callable function, why should you or I settle for the pre-rendered product a studio decides to release?
Right.
I mean, think about it. Reading a book is already an act of rendering in your mind's eye. the author gives you the tech specification, and your brain renders the faces, the voices, the architecture.
Yes.
What happens when AI allows us to externalize what our brain is doing?
This is where we enter the era of observer-specific renderings, and it will change media consumption forever.
Observer-specific renderings.
Yeah. Once an author publishes a formalized specification, say, a canonical Git repository of their new sci-fi universe, anyone with AI rendering tools can instantiate it themselves.
Meaning, render spec Harry Potter medium film style Tarantino is a valid function call.
It absolutely is. The audience now has the power to dictate the parameters.
Wow.
You could take an author's course specification and ask your local AI to render it as an 80,000-word literary novel in Brazilian Portuguese.
And your friend could take the exact same specification and render it as a 1970s Czechoslovak animation.
Precisely. The author controls what the story is, but you, the audience, control how you experience it.
That is just incredible.
The pre-rendered release, the specific $200 million movie that hits theaters, or the hardcover book that hits shelves, mm-hmm. is no longer the only path.
Right.
It merely becomes one curated path through the specification space. It might be the author's preferred rendering, but it won't be the only one available to you. You are no longer just a passive consumer of a fixed object.
Let's summarize what we've uncovered today, because this fundamentally shifts how we need to view the media we love.
It really does.
The next time you see fans arguing online about a movie adaptation, mm-hmm. remember, franchise consistency isn't a creativity problem. It is a specification infrastructure problem.
Exactly.
The tools to solve it, version control, branching, automated validation, have existed in software since the 1990s. We just lack the vocabulary to apply them to creative IP.
And by finally formalizing that vocabulary, we can separate the enduring, deeply human value of the specification from the delegable labor of the rendering.
So as you go back to your own work today, whether you're writing a novel, building a brand, or managing a team, I'll ask you, are you building the specification or polishing a rendering?
That's the real question.
For the science version of this pattern research is a Git repository, papers as tagged releases, AI contribution as commits, that's ESCI1. For the brand perception version, start from the beginning with episode one.
I'll leave you with one final thought to mull over. If intellectual properties transition into fully version-controlled open-source repositories where fans can submit pull requests directly to the canon, will the concept of the sole author become an archaic relic of the print era? Will the greatest storytellers of the future look less like solitary novelists typing in a cabin and more like canon maintainers, the Linus Torvalds of transmedia universes, curating and merging the collective imagination of a global audience?